It's undeniable, of course, we've said for some years now, we live in difficult times. The focus has turned to Syria. US Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel seems to be saying that the US military is ready to strike Damascus if it's given the order from President Obama. British Prime Minister Cameron said overnight that they're going to do something, but hasn't said what. And we're told that momentum is growing in France and Britain for punitive action. And the Syrian opposition says it's been informed of an imminent military attack. The US and its allies are blaming the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government for chemical attacks near Damascus last week. The opposition in Syria claims at least 1,300 people have been killed. But the Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Mualim warns that his country will defend itself if attacked. US naval forces, including four warships, have moved into the Persian Gulf. Late on Monday, a team of UN weapons inspectors sent to Damascus to investigate the alleged gas attacks came under fire from snipers. But given the United States' prolonged campaigns in Iraq and later in Afghanistan, it's going to take some convincing for the citizens of the United States to believe that they should be funding yet another war in a foreign country. And, of course, we've recently seen the overthrow of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt under Mohammed Morsi for fairly legitimate reasons, I might add. Oil, gas and electricity shortages, previously in adequate supplies, have crippled everyday life. Under the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt of Mohammed Morsi, all sorts of bizarre things are threatened. Talk of the Suez Canal being privatised to a foreign nation. Talk of the Great River Nile being dammed at its source, which would devastate the nation's agricultural existence. The so-called spring offensive in Egypt got rid of Mubarak, but has concentrated power in Islamist hands. The president issued a constitutional declaration in Egypt that gave him full executive, legislative and constitution-writing powers, and instead of the government governing, it pursued one sole purpose, to enshrine its ideology as law. And while we read of alleged chemical attacks in Syria, we don't read much about the detainment and torture by members of the Muslim Brotherhood of innocent civilians in Cairo, Egypt. Survivors of the Muslim Brotherhood's attacks report being beaten, handcuffed, stabbed, fired at with machine guns, electrocuted, sexually assaulted and abducted. Imagine being tossed to your death from an apartment rooftop by supporters of President Morsi. But of course, as we've seen elsewhere, the followers of the Islamist ideology promised to, quote, sacrifice our life for him, him being the Muslim Brotherhood leader Morsi. This is in Egypt. But the Western media seem to be hypnotised by the charm offensive of the Muslim Brotherhood, while a Morsi supporter says, know that you've created a new Taliban and a new Al-Qaeda in Egypt. All this crowd will split into martyrdom groups. They'll destroy you and destroy Egypt. Well, those who've overthrown Morsi are defending their sovereignty. Christian Coptic churches and monasteries have been devastated or burnt to the ground. Some were cathedrals. Some were buildings of antiquity. Throughout history, Christians of Egypt have been persecuted. But I'm told the ferocity of what is being witnessed now is unprecedented in modern history. Discrimination, abductions, Christian homes and properties being burnt or devastated, people held hostage in their own homes, fearful to leave for even essential supplies, being shot, stabbed while walking home or driving. And yet, wherever you read, it's clear that the Muslim Brotherhood has networks with, quote, international reach. So, what then of Syria? The last time I spoke to Dr. Daniel Pipes, the president of the Middle East Forum, a visiting fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, who's visiting Australia as a guest of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. In fact, he spoke at the Sydney Institute last night, and tonight he'll be speaking at Quadrant. When I spoke to Daniel Pipes in August last year, it was just after he'd written a piece for the Washington Times headed, Stay Out of Syria, Intervention is a Trap. Dr. Pipes is on the line. Daniel Pipes, good morning.
Good morning, Alan Jones.
Is that still your view?
It still is, yes. I think that it's a mistake to go in to punish the Syrians as though they're small children. That's not what one has a military for. One goes in to win, to achieve some real objective. And I worry that this could backfire. It could lead the Syrian government to use even more chemical weapons, to attack Israel, to attack Turkey, to get more support from Iran. Who knows? It's a very dangerous undertaking. To make a symbolic point.
The U.S. Defense Secretary says the military is ready to strike Damascus when Obama says so. Cameron, the British Prime Minister, seems to say he's with him all the way. And the Syrian opposition seem to be saying they've been informed of an imminent military attack.
It does seem in the offing. There won't be a surprise. Presumably, buildings have been evacuated and resources have been moved, and the Syrians are preparing for such an attack. Not the way to strike.
The United States are blaming Bashar al-Assad, the president, for chemical attacks near Damascus last week. Can we be certain that these occurred?
From what I understand, it seems quite certain now that there was deployment of chemical weapons. And it seems quite certain that it was the regime that did it. So that is not basically at issue anymore.
Right. What do you know about Syria's chemical weapons arsenal? How big, how deadly?
It is huge. In the last 20 years, as the Syrian government realized that it could no longer keep up with conventional weapons, with Israel on the conventional level, that is to say with ships and planes and tanks, it increasingly moved to WMD, weapons of mass destruction, and the WMD of choice has been chemical. It's I think, about the world's largest arsenal of chemical weapons.
So what would happen if terrorist groups seized the chemical weapon arsenal? How real is that concern?
It is one of the abiding worries about the Syrian civil war, is that the Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist rebels will seize these chemicals. So far as I know, that hasn't happened yet.
But if we hand over the control in Syria, as we have in Egypt, to the Muslim Brotherhood, what would we make of their likely use of chemical weapons?
My view is that the Assad regime is wretched, despicable, horrid,
yep.
But that the rebels are even worse. The regime at least does not have grand ideological goals. The rebels do. It's a choice between Hitler and Stalin.
Quite. Keeping it simple, therefore, is it true that the main reason why desperate Syrians don't want the quote-unquote Arab Spring is that the Assad regime would end up in the hands of Islamist extremists?
Syria would end up in the hands of Islamist extremists.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a fear. But what's happened over the last 2.5 years is a division of Syria into three parts. The regime-controlled central part, the periphery controlled by the rebels, and finally in the northeast, a good chunk of the country under Kurdish control, and they don't want to be part of anybody else's war.
I'm speaking to Dr. Daniel Pipes, who's the president of the Middle East Forum, a visiting fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. I say that because the last time I spoke to you, you warned that the overthrow of Mubarak, and I just was last night looking at your words, would bring, quote, an even worse rule. How far from civil war are we in Egypt?
Civil war doesn't seem like a likely prospect, but what we're seeing is a resistance to the rule of the new strongman, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Is he worse than Mubarak or better? I can't say. He's only been in power for 2 months. He's a bit of an enigma. He could be better, he could be worse. He could be an Islamist himself. He could be someone who would open up the economy conceivably and provide for more civil freedoms. We just don't know.
But you wrote a piece in the Washington Times last year called Stay Out of Syria, Intervention is a Trap, in which you said that Bashar Assad's wretched presence in the presidential palace of Damascus may, contrary to Western assumptions, do more harm than good. And you said it's murderous, it's terrorist, it's pro-Iran, but, quote, it staves off anarchy, Islamist rule, genocide, and rogue control of Syria's chemical weapons. Is that still your view?
Yeah, as I just said, I think however awful Assad is, the rebels are yet worse. So I think the best thing is the standoff that now exists. I don't want the rebels to win. I don't want Assad to squelch them. I think we, the outside world, from a strategic point of view, are best off. Now, it is a humanitarian tragedy, and therefore I think we, the outside world, should devote our efforts to try and protect, to push the fighting away as much as possible from the civilians. But otherwise, we should stay out. It's not our war.
But Western forces seem quiet. Western forces seem intent on helping to overthrow Assad, and there's talk about wanting to arm the rebels. Who's advising them?
That is the general consensus, I agree. I severely, like you, disagree with it.
And you wrote last year that helping the rebels neglects a fundamental question. Does intervention in Syria against Mr. Assad promote our own interests?
Right, that tends to be neglected. We tend to focus on the humanitarian, and of course the humanitarian is important. But no less important are our interests. Who is going to be ruling in Damascus, and what kind of rule will this be? How aggressive will it be? Will it have terrorist networks? Will it be building more WMD? These are things that we have to always keep in mind.
Because you made that point on this program, well, nearly a year ago, and you said, and I was looking at what you said last night, the rebels are Islamist, and we should be concerned about their determination to build an ideological government even more hostile to the West than that of Mr. Assad.
Exactly. Nothing's changed in that regard.
So if the rebels win, they then break off their relations with Iran, but then they bring into the camp Islam's very significant Sunni forces.
Exactly, which are in the long term more potent because the Sunnis outnumber the Shiites something like 10 to 1. And they have the money of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the backing of Turkey. It would be even worse.
So just explain to my listeners so they understand that, because Assad has got Alawi support, which I think is about, last time I looked, about 12%, and the Sunni Arabs are about 70% of the population. What's the difference between the Sunnis and the Alawis?
The Sunnis are the main branch of Islam. They dominate. They are something like 90% of all Muslims. The Shiites are pretty much the rest, and the Shiites, unlike the Sunnis, are divided in turn into many different groups, and some of them have spun off into essentially being new religions. The Alawi sect is, in fact, a different religion. It can't call itself a different religion because Islam doesn't allow anyone to leave the religion. Therefore, it sort of pretends to be still Muslim. But if you look in detail at its customs and its doctrines, this is a new religion. It's like Christianity to Judaism, Alawi religion to Islam. It is a different religion, and it has been very much despised by Sunni Muslims in Syria over the centuries. And that anger over 47 years of essentially Alawi rule since 1966 is what we see at present, and one of the main causes of the viciousness of the civil war in Syria.
Michael Bird from Turak writes to the papers today. This is just Joe Citizen. What's happening in Syria is tragic, he says, but I cannot fathom why America would consider taking on the Syrians when the biggest gripe by Muslims around the globe and one of the main reasons for Islamic terrorism is America's involvement in Arab-Muslim countries in the Middle East. It's time to let the Arabs sort out their own problems. I mean, is it valid to say it's in our benefit, the West's benefit, if we stay out?
I think so. It's their war, their civil war. We should protect our interests. We should do what we can to help the innocents, but we should basically stay out. I know Mr. Bird, and I endorse what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's a clever point.
But then you've got Obama and Cameron saying the exact opposite. I mean, so you hasten, your thesis is, you hasten the Assad regime's collapse. It's not going to save lives. It won't end the conflict. And I think you said to me last time, it'll close the opening chapter, but worse violence is likely to follow.
What can I say? The geniuses in the White House and in 10 Downing Street are hard at work.
Amazing. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. There we are. The geniuses in the White House and Downing Street are hard at work. And you just wonder, these people have learnt nothing. They've learnt nothing from Egypt, have they? Nothing at all. So, you know, and the conflict in the Middle East, Iran is backing Assad. The Gulf states are against Assad. Assad is against the Muslim Brotherhood. But the Muslim Brotherhood and Obama, the Muslim Brotherhood, Obama's in bed with the Brotherhood opposing General Sisi, who's the Egyptian defense minister and the armed forces chief. But the Gulf states are pro-General Sisi, which means they're against the Muslim Brotherhood. Iran is pro-Hamas. Hamas is backing the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama seems to be backing the Muslim Brotherhood because they're the rebels. The Gulf states are pro-US, but Turkey's with the Gulf states and it's against Assad. But Turkey's pro-Muslim Brotherhood against General Sisi. This is welcome to the Middle East. and Britain broke and America broke, say, we're going to do something. We're going to sort this out. And they say that momentum is growing in France and Britain for punitive action. And the Syrian opposition say they've been informed of an imminent military attack. What the hell are we doing there?